Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Debbie Rowley.
And it's the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needle artists. That doesn't sound right. Needlework artists, because needle artists, that could be something else. So
it could be tattoo artists.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not go there. So needlework okay. Artists, yeah. All right, announcements. Remember Monday, we're doing Monday Hearts. So if you have a heart-shaped or a project with a heart in it, FT Monday Hearts is the Instagram or Facebook hashtag. Post those and let us know how you're doing on the heart type things. Or as Beth has said many times, if you have a beating heart, you qualify. Just post whatever you're working on. Doesn't matter. We ain't picky. Now tonight, our Wednesday night stitch hour, 8 o'clock Eastern time. On the YouTube channel, Trisha Nguyen will be back. This time, Trisha Nguyen, Thistle Threads, last time she talked about caskets. This time, her 17th century white work samplers. She's done an awful lot of research on 17th century white work samplers. She has a class going on now and a new one starting in January. And so she will be talking to us about how those are put together, how the stitches are done, all the things about white work samplers. So be sure and join us tonight at 8 o'clock so you don't miss that, because even if you never want to do a piece of white work, 17th century needlework is worth learning about. So join us for that. Yes. Sunday will be our third in the 7-week series of Fiber Talk Meditates. And so join us for that. We'll have it down now. We're going to do a lot more stitching this week because we have the exercises and the breathing in place. So Deb DeCrane is going to lead us through those, and we'll just spend short amounts of time on that. So we'll have much more time for stitching. So join us for that, for meditative stitching. That's been a lot of fun on a Sunday afternoon. Just a quick hour of stitching. And Sunday's guest, Sandy Higgins, who does needlepoint. She does needlework finishing of all kinds, but her real focus is needlepoint. And had a great conversation with her, connected with her through Gay Ann Rogers, because she does just about all of Gay Ann's work, finishing work. And that's, if you've seen any of that, that's beautiful. That's all Sandy Higgins' work. So I got to talk to her about needlepoint finishing and needlework in general, and that was a great conversation. So that's Sunday. Don't miss that. And you, Debbie Rowley, are active. You've got stuff happening here. You got classes on Shining Needles. Well, let's do the Shining Needle Society first and then explain how people do Shining Needle Society, because that's not something that people are necessarily familiar with.
Okay. Well, the Shining Needle Society is a it's hard to classify, but basically it is an organization that offers online classes. And the online classes are offered in a wide variety of techniques with a wide number of teachers. And usually you don't have to join Shining Needle Society, but if you are on their email list, then you'll get all the announcements when they have a new class coming out. So I've been teaching with Shining Needle Society for about 4 or 5 years, and I always have a great time with my classes. My classes are in Counted Canvas, and I offer usually the classes 8 to 10 weeks. I have video stitch demonstrations that my students can watch whenever they want to for their so they can see how to do some of these more complex stitches. When you sign up for a class, okay, so let's just go through the registration process for me. You send me an email. You give me your name, email address, phone number, which class you want, and how you want to pay, PayPal, check, credit card. I enter your registration, and then after registration closes, I order supplies. I put kits together, I mail everything out, and then class begins usually 6 weeks to 2 months after registration closes. And you can get a complete kit. You can have just the instructions. You can get instructions with the canvas. If you've gotten a kit previously, you can audit the class. And all of it, you're still a full-fledged member of the class. You still get to have all the videos, emails. There's a dedicated classroom set up on Groups.io where we post pictures and lessons and emails and ask questions. And I'm adding, because I've just finished this with my last class with Shining Needle, I'm adding Zoom sessions once a week.
They're part of the Shining Needle Society class, the Zoom sessions?
They're part of my classes.
Oh, okay.
So I guess Shining Needle Society is just the platform, if you will. She gets the word out to her email list. I put the word out to my email list. We put it on Facebook, you know, lots of different places. And then when you're a member of the class, you'll receive a link to the Zoom sessions.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I'll be doing them once a week, and you can ask questions. We discuss the project. We had a lot of fun with it with Adagio. I just finished a class today with Shining Needle Society and had a large number of people sign up. So I was doing three Zoom sessions a week just to make sure everybody was on track and didn't have questions and problems and things like that. And it was the best online class I've ever had. As far as people posting pictures in the classroom and asking questions. And I think they just felt more connected.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I would think so. It would help them out a lot. Yeah. That Shining Needle Society, that's something, if you're looking at inside, online classes, that's something to sign up for, because there is something going on from teachers all the time. That's it's one of those, at least for me, where I know of it and I've never done a class. I've poked around a little bit, just never done a class. But it's one of those to me that once you're connected to it, you go, why didn't I know about this? You know, and if you're not connected to it, somebody really needs to point you to it. But it's a real valuable resource and a good way to get involved in projects and learn from a lot of really top-notch teachers.
I was going to say right now, in addition to me taking registration for my two classes that I'm going to be doing in January, they're also registering for a beadwork class. There's a line drawn canvas class. Curdy has an ornament that she's registering for now. And those are just the ones I can recall right off the top of my head. But there's also white work classes. There's, surface embroidery. There's all kinds of classes, all different kinds of techniques. It's not just counted canvas.
Yeah, and I think that's the other part. I mean, I learned about it from you. You're the one who exposed me to it. And yeah, I think people don't realize the breadth of techniques that are taught through the society there. It's just about everything you could want. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So now you're teaching angles?
Yes, we're doing an encore of angles. I've taught it before for Shining Needle Society, but you know, every time someone posts a picture on Facebook and goes, oh, I want to take that class. So we're going to offer it again. And mostly Amadeus, which has not been offered through Shining Needle Society before. They have very similar color schemes. Mostly Amadeus also has three other colorways in addition to the original one that's very similar to Angles. And it's mostly Amadeus is based on Gene Hilton's Amadeus stitches. There's all kinds of Amadeus stitches, and a student would have a thorough grounding in how to do an Amadeus stitch by the time they get whatever size, whatever shape, by the time they get through with this project.
Yep. Yeah, and Angles, that's still of your more recent stuff, one of my favorites. That's yeah, that's a good one. And those, if you're wondering what they look like, you can find them just by searching for those. But Debbie sent me photos, so for this podcast, on the podcast page at WeTalkFiber.com, or in the video at YouTube, I will use those photos first, so you'll be able to see them right away. And it won't be too hard to figure out which one is mostly Amadeus. So,
well, I don't know, Gary. For somebody who doesn't know Amadeus stitches,
I think mostly is the operative word there. Yeah.
Well, that's true. Yeah, because
you see a lot of stitches that look alike but are different. Yeah, that's going to be the one. Yeah.
That's mostly Amadeus. It's long and skinny.
Yeah. Yeah. So, those two from Shining Needle Society, and go check that out. It's worth it. I'll put a link in the show notes for it, but do check that out, because that is an ongoing, very active, wide variety of things. It's not something you want to just do a one-hit thing. You want to keep connected with it. It's a good organization. And then now, out of Debbie's Designs, then, you have other things going on.
Yes, I do. I started this back in April doing stitch-alongs on my website. They're free. You don't have to sign up for anything. Just look, and if you want to stitch along, you certainly can. They're relatively small designs, but I've just started another one, and this one's a mystery. I posted a thread list of what I had pulled that I thought I might be using on October the 5th. I always post on Mondays, so on October the 5th. And then I was not able to start the next week because of my dad dying. And then I did post the first part of it this Monday the 19th.
Right. Yep. And that one, what are we calling that one?
Regal Autumn.
Yes. Now, this is, you say you pulled the threads, so there's subject to change, or
well,
you're
yes
pretty confident?
And no.
okay.
When I pull
way to
threads,
way to commit, Debbie. Good. That's good.
Yes. Well, when I pull threads for a project, I pull everything I think I might possibly want to use. I may or may not use all of them. And I may get into the project and discover, oh, you know what? I really needed a neon raise and I don't have one. So I go pull a neon raise in. This particular, and the thing about these stitch alongs, and you know, there's several people who've been doing them, stitch from your stash. Just because I'm showing it particular color and use a particular thread doesn't mean that you have to. It's a relatively, it's a design based on a quilt block, and so it's real easy to change the colors. If you want advice about changing colors, just send me an email and I'll help you with that. But several people have been stitching these stitch-alongs and not using the threads that I'm using, and that's fine. These are designed to be, you know, just little projects that you can add into your stitching rotation if you want to. Since I'm only posting a lesson once a week, or, you know, the next step, it's hardly a lesson, but the next step. But it's all the diagrams and the thread and stitching tips and things like that. I mean, it's pretty thorough.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so you can debbiesdesigns.com and get on the mailing list. Just sign up for the mailing list and then you get notified. But yeah, it works.
Oh,
better.
Yeah. That reminds me, in a couple of weeks, I will be sending out a free Christmas ornament design to everybody on my mailing list.
Get on the mailing list. See, I said, get on the mailing list.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because you do one of those ornaments every year, right?
I try to. There have been a couple of years that I haven't, but I've got this one designed. I've got the threads pulled, and I'll be stitching it. And so as soon as I'll probably start that tonight. So as soon as I get it stitched and can take a picture of it and get the instructions written up, I will be emailing everybody on my email list, and they'll get the chart.
Yep. So worth it right there, folks. There you go. Yep.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I don't sell my email list to anybody, and you might get 10 emails a year from me. I'm not going to flood your inbox.
I can attest to that. Yes, I'm on the list. There will be large gaps before you hear from Debbie. Don't worry about it.
Large gaps, very large gaps. You know, I'm on some email lists And I'm getting two emails a day, and I'm just like, stop.
Yeah.
I'm about to unsub here because I don't recall signing up for this. I don't want what you're offering. And you're, you know, I'm having to delete 97 emails out of my inbox every day. But my, I'm not one of those.
No, you're not. You're not. No threat there. No.
No threat.
So check all that out. Shiny Needle Society, debbiesdesigns.com. Get on the mailing list and you'll be informed. Yay. Take the angles class. I'm not going to do it as much as I'd like to, but I just got so many stupid projects going. I'm not starting another one.
Have you finished Royal Garden, by the way?
We're not talking about that, Debbie.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, never mind then.
It's sitting there. It's, I'll tell you what happened. I'll tell you what happened with that. Okay. I redid the center part, got all caught up to where I once was. And then I was going to do the Scotch stitches. And then we had the live show for Dawn to Dusk. And I started that, but then got into the whole thing about having the needlepoint canvas square. So I set that aside, and then we started the Monday Hearts thing. And so I was working on Gay Ann Rogers' heart. And then what's the other thing that we started that I can't remember now? I just worked on it last. Oh, the meditative stitching started. So I started working on that. So then I had to put the Royal Garden aside. So that's sitting in a chair in the corner, and it's covered with the canvas for Dawn to Dusk because I want to block that before I use it. And so I've been working on these other two, and I'm trying to keep up with the posting. So now I've been busy otherwise. So, Royal Garden is coming back out because I have all the threads sitting there on my table. I got all caught up and now I want to get going on it. But, the days fly by. So,
yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
So I have all of that. And then I have on my, Case Creation Stowaway, I have Hannah Longstreth. That sampler that I really like, and I'd like to do that. And so that's sitting over there leaning against the wall. It's just kind of ridiculous. And then last night, we're recording on Tuesday. So Monday night, there were two football games. And I sat like a lump in the recliner through the entire first game. And usually when there's a football game on, I'm all set up to watch that and stitch. And it was halftime of the second game when I finally said, all right, now I'm going to stitch. So that was like 9 o'clock at night. And, it's just stupid. So,
I know.
I'll get them all done eventually. Yep. Eventually.
Yep.
Yep. So, all right. Now Sunday when we were doing, all right, this is how this started. So we have a list of stitching habits.
Okay.
That we're going to talk about. And I'll tell you how it started. So Sunday, we're doing the meditative stitching. And behind the scenes thing is when we go silent for the meditative stitching session, those of us, Beth and Jennifer and Deb DeCrane and I, we can talk behind the scenes. I can mute us out so nobody can hear us and they hear the music, and we can talk behind the scenes. And we were all stitching. And somebody asked a question, and I had a needle in my mouth because I was holding a needle while I got another thread ready, and I put them in my mouth. And it was a size 28 needle, and I started to talk, and in those little dinky pieces of wire, I forgot I had it in my mouth, and almost dropped it, and then I thought, wait a minute, you idiot! Not only is that don't want to drop it and then step on it. But I just forgot I had it in my mouth. So it was, all right, what are all the things that we do, smart or stupid? I don't know which one, and that's stupid. What are all the things that we do when we stitch that we don't really think about? And so that was my first one was, do you put needles in your mouth as a regular habit?
Do I?
Yes.
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. I'm normal.
Yes, you're normal. Of course, the needles that I use for the most part are size 22, so they're substantially larger than size 28. But it's not in my mouth for very long. It's, you know, it's just while I'm getting the thread ready to put in it.
Yeah.
And I don't always put it in my mouth. Sometimes I put it on the needle minder, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because that's the only time I do it is when I'm getting another thread. And I learned, you know, I started doing that with needle points. So size 22s, I mean, it's pretty hard to miss that if it's in your mouth.
Yeah, but, exactly.
But that habit has continued with 40 count reproduction samplers, and those little 28s or 26s, you forget about those. So,
Yeah,
that wasn't smart. So that, okay. So use needle minders in your mouth. I guess those are the two options, huh? What else would you do with your needle? I don't know.
Well, you know, sometimes I just stick it in the canvas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's only if I'm getting ready to thread it. I never just leave it sticking in the canvas. As a general rule, it's on a needle minder because I don't want it to, with the dogs, I don't want the needle to come out and for them and be on the floor and them accidentally step on it.
Right. Right.
I don't want to accidentally step on it, but I'm very seldom barefooted. But, you know, for my dogs, I try to be real aware of that. And so I usually, now if I don't have a needle minder, I will sometimes put the needle in the very edge of the canvas on the by the stretcher bars next to the tacks if I can slip it in there.
Okay.
If I don't have a needle minder. But usually I've got a needle minder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I do too. Needle mind. I mean, they're on the needle minders all the time. But except when they're in my mouth.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's just stupid. I don't know why. But it's a habit, and you know, it's right there. You grab it and you go. And
right.
Yeah.
I was going to say, as a general rule, it's not a good idea to store a needle in the cloth because needles can rust. The oils from your hands can transfer to the fabric. Now, this is not necessarily for a canvas project, but for on linen or on fabric. It's not a good idea to store the needle, in the fabric within your stitching area.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if it takes some time before you get back to it, it could leave a mark and you don't want that. So, you know, on the very edge of your fabric would be okay because that's going to be cut away for finishing. But as a general rule, you don't want to store your needle within your stitching area.
Yeah, that's. I don't like storing them on the ground cloth at all. Because for me, yeah, on canvas that's mounted on stretcher bars, that's probably pretty good. But then to me, if you get in the habit of storing them on linen and you just decide to wind it up, roll it up, and forget that needle's there. You know, it's not a good thing. No.
Yeah, not a good thing.
No. Well, all right. You mentioned about wash your hands. Now, when I talked to Sandy Higgins and asked her some questions about, because when you're a finisher, you get stuff in all conditions and all. Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I'm sure that is a world we don't want to see.
No.
but one of the top things she talked about was keeping your hands clean. And then that conjured up visions in my head of her receiving finished needlework that probably, needed
somebody
a serious washing.
Cheetos while they were stitching.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Who was it? Somebody posted at one point some time ago about eating Cheetos and she had a pair of tweezers or.
Well, that would work because that way you could still eat your Cheetos or your potato chips, your popcorn or, you know, some other kind of oily snack without getting it on your fingers.
But so then I put on the list here for today the question about washing your hands, because I'm kind of a maniac about it. I mean, I wash my hands. Well, I'm not one to sit for 2 or 3 hours at a time. I'll get up. And so usually when I get up, I will make, no matter what I get up to do, I will make a point to wash my hands before I go back to stitching. So I'm pretty picky about that. I assume you do too, but, you know, washing your hands, I think is one of the biggest keys to keeping your needlework clean.
Well, you know, as a general rule, because I cook and wash dishes several times during the day, my hands are clean.
Hard to avoid that, yeah.
Hard to avoid that. And the problem I run into more than anything else is my hands getting too dry because of all the hand washing. And so, you know, I do have a hand lotion, hand cream that I use that does not transfer oils. And that's more of something that I need to be aware of using because when your hands get dry, they get rough. And rough hands snag on threads.
Yeah, and now we're getting into here in the States, getting into winter and dry air, and yeah, already I've been having to apply a lotion more than once while stitching just to keep from snagging. You go all summer and you're trying to keep your hands from sweating, and then just
And you know, I so as a general rule, my hands are fairly clean all the time anyway. You know, but usually I stitch in the evening after supper. Well, after supper, I've been helping do the dishes, so you know, because I'm really lucky, Rod does the dishes every night.
Yes, you are.
I'm very fortunate, but you know, he says, "Well, you cooked it, so I can clean up." Well, thank you very much. But I usually help him. And so usually I'm washing my hands too. And after I eat. And so usually it's not an issue. But you know, I usually don't eat with my hands anyway.
That's encouraging.
I did learn to use a fork at a very early age. And so generally
You've come a long way with your training. It's so impressive.
Exactly.
We're so proud of you.
Oh yes. Well, I'm rather proud of myself. I got a gold star on my Debbie's accomplishments poster.
That's like I'll this is silly, but like when I work on my bike or either bike, I usually will make a point to not stitch that night because even though it's hard to avoid getting grease under the nails and it doesn't always come out right away, so then I won't stitch because you know where that one little bit of grease under your nail is going to end up.
Oh, yeah.
White thread on the top, guaranteed.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm pretty picky about that, but yeah, so washing your hands, I mean, it was interesting. She brought that up right away. Clean hands and yeah, so important. And then do you probably don't. Not, like I cover up whatever projects I'm working on, they're always covered up when I'm done. So you're probably pounding away on your whatever project you're stitching on all the time that covering it up is really not worth the trouble. But like you know, I've got three or four that, you know, and so I cover them up just to keep the dust off of them. And it's, you know, it's trivial to me. It's probably trivial dust, but over time, you know, that can accumulate. And so I make sure that stuff gets covered up and I make sure the threads get covered up. But I imagine for you, it's a different thing where you're motoring through those things. So it really is just not relevant.
Yeah, I usually work on one project at a time. And, you know, I realize that that sounds really bizarre for most people, but that's the way I've always stitched.
Well, but see, you actually finish them. So
Yes, I do.
there's some admiration there to be had because I don't and they don't get finished. So
But, you know, if it's a project that I know, like for the Needle Arts Mystery Retreat, I do keep that covered when I'm not working on it because, you know, it's the kind of thing where, okay, I've got my instructions ready, and so I stitched my part of it, but then I have to wait for the other teachers to get me their instructions. And so I don't know when that's going to be, so I cover it up until I can stitch on it again. And my threads stay in project bags and usually in floss away bags within the project bags. And so I don't worry about covering up my threads because they're already covered.
I keep mine in some kind of bag according to the project, but then the stuff I'm working on laying out on the table, then I have a towel that goes over that too, just to
No, mine stay in the bag. I take out one thread to work with at a time and then put it back in the bag.
Yeah, I think it's worth the trouble, you know, especially if you're working on a big project over time, little bits of dust over time accumulate.
I agree. And, you know, for I do have a couple of things that are unfinished that were class projects that not a class that I was teaching, but a class that I was taking. And I don't know when I'll get back to stitching them, and they're covered.
Yeah. Yeah, it's worth the trouble. It is. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely worth the trouble, especially if you're like me and you live on a dirt road.
Oh, now see there. Yeah, there's the other part. Exactly. Yeah. We don't appreciate that. I mean, dirt road, yeah, obviously. But even if you don't and have windows open with the wind coming in, you don't appreciate. And yeah, you dust the house, you know, the furniture gets dusty,
you're supposed to dust?
Well, there's talk about that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's talk. It's a new thing. don't bother. It's a lot of hassle.
Yeah, it is.
Just wipe your sleeve across it as you walk by. You'll find.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, it's fine. But it, you know, you don't see that. It's that kind of thing that you don't see. And over months, you know, it's not a hard surface, so the dust gets in and accumulates, and it's worth it. It is.
And you don't need a fancy cover. Pillowcase works just fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now we have a bunch of we have a bunch of towels from my aquarium days that just piles of them that are there for whatever. Use them when I clean my bikes, put them down. If we're traipsing dirty stuff through the house, we put them out on the ground. And so, I just keep two or three hand towels that, are used just to cover things up. And, it doesn't matter what happens to them. They aren't in regular bathroom circulation. So,
well, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, I like pillowcases because I slip the project inside the pillowcase, so that means the front and the back is covered.
Ah, okay, that's good. Yeah, I see. Mine usually is laying down on something, so I just put it over the top. But a pillowcase. Yeah, I'll borrow a couple of pillowcases here and see how that goes. I got a feeling I won't be using them very long.
Well, and I also like a pillowcase because even if my piece is on the stand, I can just slip the pillowcase over it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. Yep. Okay. I should do that. And that's the other thing. You have dogs. You know, a lot of stitchers have pets, and that's another reason to cover things up.
Yes.
Enough pet hair gets into our stitching if we have pets without being covered. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you may think that you're not if you held your piece eye level, horizontal with your eyes and look, you can see all the little hairs sticking up.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. We don't have pets anymore. We had cats. And anybody who has cats knows what that's like. There's hair everywhere. You got to stay on top of it or it gets bad.
Yeah.
So, yep. All right, now I know we both use stretcher bars, and I use scroll frames for linen because I have to have my projects held. I can't hand hold them. I need them held and tight. Now, you use Evertights, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I went away from Evertights to Adjust-A-Frame, which is a system a guy not too far from here makes, and I really like those. But same principle where you put the project on, and then there's little screw things that you turn and stretch it tight. That's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You can just get your canvas so tight.
Yep.
And, you know, I've seen on Facebook a couple of times people wanting to know, can they put their canvas on a scroll rod? Because they don't have stretcher bars, they have scroll rods. It's really not a good idea.
No.
Really not a good idea. You can't get it tight enough. And then as you roll the canvas, you're not going to put a crease in it, but you can alter how the stitches are laying on the canvas. And so it's just generally not a good idea.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I did early on did some needlepoint on scroll rods, and when I took it off, I was like, oh, no, no, I should not have done that. No, stretcher bars are the way to go. I mean, linen and Aida, that kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, I have that on scroll bars all the time. But
yes, that's fine.
Yeah. But not not canvas and not Congress cloth. No, put it on stretcher bars.
Yep.
Crank it right out till till you can bounce a quarter off of it.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. But those conventional stretcher bars are fine. They're just fine. But just know that at some point along the way in the project, you're probably going to want to take all the tacks out and redo it to get it tighter again. And that's where the EverTights and these adjusted frames, you don't have to do that. You just turn the screws some more. So
exactly. Well, and, you know, if canvas work is something that you enjoy doing, it doesn't hurt to invest in some EverTights. They're reusable. You can use them, you know, it's not only one project and then you can't use them ever again. You can use them over and over again. Well, you can use regular stretcher bars over and over again. But, you know, if there is a particular size that you like to work on, like you like 14-inch or 16-inch, just get two pairs of 14-inch, two pairs of 16-inch. And, you know, you'll be like me eventually. I'm sitting here looking at my tub full of EverTights.
Yeah, they do tend to accumulate, don't they? Yep. Yep, they do accumulate. And that's, yeah, somebody asked that when we were getting Royal Garden together, is can you reuse stretcher bars? You can reuse them forever. And
until they will no longer hold a tack. Right.
And then you flip them over and use the other side.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. No, they're wood. You push tacks or staples into it, and yeah, you can use them forever. I mean, they're relatively cheap, and long term, it's a really good investment because
good investment.
Yeah, no, that's yeah. Can you when I read that, you know, can you reuse them? I almost chuckled. And I thought, well, no, people wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know. And then, but then once you own them and start using them and realize how long you can use them for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can use these forever.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be pretty. You'd be putting projects on and off quite a bit to wear out a set of bars. No doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then, you must use a stand. What do you use?
I do.
Yeah.
I use a System 4. I find that it works really well. I have, actually, I have three System 4 stands. I have a clamp, I have a travel stand, and a table stand, and multiple clamps.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not necessary for the average person. The average person does not need that kind of setup. I just got tired of moving clamps from this chair to that chair to now this setup, and oh, I need a clamp to go with me. And so I just bought multiple clamps.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, yeah, you're in a different world than most stitchers, but
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, and I use Case Creation stands. I gotta have something hold the project. I want both hands free. That's just the way I am.
There's a couple of reasons why you need to have a stand. And this applies for fabric stitching or for canvas stitching. When you have both hands free, you can stitch a lot faster because you have one hand on top and one hand under. And so the one hand, you're not having to constantly move your hand over and under, which really will wear your shoulders out and your elbows and everything else. It makes it a lot easier to stitch, to have one hand over and one hand under. And usually your non-dominant hand is the one that's on top, usually.
Okay. This comes up, every time this comes up, I have to think about that. You have your non-dominant on top.
Yes, my left hand is on top and my right hand is on bottom because I'm right-handed.
Okay, I'm left-handed and my left hand, I'm just, now, if you could see me, I'm holding my hands as if I were stitching. My left hand is always on top. That's weird.
Well, okay. I said generally, because you will find something that is comfortable for you. Usually, the reason why I have my non-dominant hand on top is so I can watch and see what it's doing.
I don't trust it.
My right hand knows what to do. And so it can be where I can't watch it.
But the left hand, oh boy.
Okay. And so another reason why a stand is really nice is I am of an age now where holding something in my hand for an extended period of time sets up a lot of fatigue in my hand, which means I can't stitch.
Yeah.
So if my piece is being held in a stand, then my hand is not being fatigued.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
when you think about it, your hand is in the same position while you're holding your fabric or your stretcher bars or whatever. And keeping your muscles in the same position for an extended period of time is going to cause cramping and fatigue and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I admire people who can do that for hours. I don't know how they do that. And I don't have any interest in learning either.
Yeah, me either. When I have a stand, and a stand is perfectly fine to hold my work for me so I don't have to.
Right.
And if you're going to use a laying tool, it's almost essential that you have both hands available.
Right, right, right. And that, you know, and people say, stands are expensive. Yeah, they are and they aren't. I mean, there's different levels, but the easiest way, if you don't have a stand and want to at least try it and learn how to stitch with two hands free, is just get a sock and fill it with a bunch of pennies or something. And yeah. Weight your
put
stand
it on the edge of the table.
Yep, right on the edge of the table, hanging off, and have at it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can be pretty effective that way. And you know that for that matter, a couple of wood clamps from Home Depot will clamp it to the table too. You can do that, and effective, cheap. So.
Yep. Very cheap, very portable. You know, if you're traveling around and you need something that will hold your piece for you and you don't want to carry the stand, those quick clamps are great.
Yes. Yep. Don't damage anything.
Nope.
Clamp right to the table and have at it. Yep.
And they're very flat. They're easy to transport. They're lightweight. Now, I do recommend that you have the pointy end sticking up.
Okay.
From
yeah,
the
that
edge
makes,
of the table, because if you have it sticking down, you run your leg into it.
Yep. Yeah, that's a self-preservation thing there. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, and it's somewhat backwards to the way the clamp operates, because the trigger and the clamp then will be on the underneath.
Yep.
But and that's see, okay. You've got that. The pointy end sticking up, and that's better. Trust me on this. I know from personal experience.
The scars are visible.
Yeah, kind of.
I thought you were going to say, because now my reason would be to, because I would have thread snagging on the mechanisms all the time if it was on the bottom.
Well, that too.
But I didn't think about scarring up my knees, so that's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, there are highly inexpensive ways to get your project held for you.
Yes.
And even if you're using scroll bars, you can clamp the vertical, the side arms of the scroll bars, you can clamp those to a table and
Absolutely.
Do the same thing. Yep.
Absolutely. But, you know, here's the thing. If you stitch a lot, it's really good to invest in the equipment.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. If you've been stitching for years, I've been stitching, and I hear this all the time, I've been stitching for years and years and years in hand, and everything's fine. Yeah, everything might be fine. Wouldn't you love to find it easier?
Yeah.
And to me, it's just so, I can stitch in hand. I've stitched in hand. But it's just so much easier if I'm using a frame.
Yep. Yeah, no, I, a long time ago, I stitched in hand too, and no thanks. It's just easier. It's more comfortable. And you can get up and walk away from it and not figure out where to put it. And, to me, it's just Yeah, it's fantastic. And it's right there when you're ready to come back to it. And
yep.
Just an awful lot, lot there. Oort jar, or do you just throw them in the basket?
Well, now this is an interesting question because people have all different ways of controlling their ends that they're stitching, that they've cut off and that they're not stitching with anymore. And I like something that is pretty wide because I just kind of want to wave my hand over in the general direction and drop the thread without having to poke it down in something.
So you have a trough from the barn then.
Exactly. And then after the project is finished, then I gather it all up and throw it away. But, you know, at my house, it also winds up as a repository for Rod's candy wrappers, for his mints that he eats after dinner, and for stickers that we pull out of the dog's fur.
Wow. Okay.
So having something wider that I don't have to poke my fingers down into is better for me.
Okay. Yeah, to me, it's one of the more interesting aspects of stitching. Because I use an Oort jar. As a matter of fact, I have two of them now from It's Mike's Turn, it's an Etsy shop. Guy does gorgeous woodwork, and I am a sucker for gorgeous woodwork. Yeah,
absolutely beautiful.
Stunning.
But I'm putting scissors in them.
Oh, okay. So I have two of those, and then I have a ceramic one from Sassy Jack's that I really like. So it's stupid because I have three of these Oort jars, two of them just because I just love the beautiful wood, but I have three Oort jars, and oftentimes I'll think, there's a basket right under the table. Why do I put them in an Oort jar and then at the end of the year throw them in the trash? Where does that come from? But I don't know.
You know, I think it's natural to have a love and appreciation for beautiful things and just want to have them where you can look at them and appreciate them and feel of them. You know, those Oort jars from It's Mike's Turn just feel so beautiful. I mean, they're just wonderful just to hold in your hand and to look at. Yeah. They're so pretty. And so, you know, I don't have a problem with having beautiful things.
Yeah. Yeah, the Oort jar is one of those things, but and you know, even though I wonder whether it makes a lick of sense, I still do it. So whatever.
Doesn't matter if it makes any sense or not. If it brings you pleasure, it's fine. Yeah.
And I will say, if you want to see beautiful and purchase beautiful needle cases or Oort jars or other gorgeous woods, most exotic woods, Etsy shop, It's Mike's Turn. Is the place to go. And usually this time of year, he'll have a whole bunch of items for sale. And then by Christmas, they're gone. And then he doesn't work for a while. But, it's just stunning wood. It is just beautiful, beautifully finished and crafted. Yeah. Oh, man, this stuff is gorgeous.
They're gorgeous.
It really is. So check that out. Tell him you heard about it on Fiber Talk. I think we've sent him a whole bunch of business and he probably doesn't even know where it came from.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You know, guys who can do that kind of work should be supported. So,
yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So a barn trough for you and a beautiful Oort jar for me. All right. I got that. Now, do you pay attention to your needles brand? Do you have one that you lock in on?
Well, for the most part, I use John James needles because that's what I supply in my kits. And so that's what I have the most of around here is John James needles.
Okay.
I have not been able to determine that much difference between brand to brand, unless it's just really bad.
Yep. Yeah. See, Peacemaker and Tulip for me, I waffle back and forth. Dislike them. I will tell a story. Okay. So learned a tip from Gayanne Rogers last time she was on a live show where she keeps an embroidery needle, a sharp embroidery needle on the back side of her pieces. So when she goes to finish off a thread, she'll switch to that embroidery needle.
Yeah.
And because it'll just poke its way through anything and you don't have to sit there and monkey and weave it through and so on and so forth. And so good tip. Okay. Now, I have good embroidery needles somewhere. I can't find them. And I, because I bought them because I was doing a Trish Burr surface embroidery project, and I bought good embroidery needles. I don't know where they're at, but for some reason, I have two packages of DMC embroidery needles. And I thought, all right, who cares? I'm just using this to finish off a thread. So I took one of those out. Holy smokes, Debbie. When I went to put the, because I use a needle threader, and I was doing it under the magnifying glass, just because it was, you know, it was right there in the way. Holy smokes, the eye of that thing, you could have sawed wood with it.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, my word. Yeah. So yeah, I just threw them away. And for me, that was, it's worth it to buy good needles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, like if you go to a needlework shop, I don't know if you'll find a needle called an embroidery needle, but you will find chenille and crewel needles, and they have a sharp tip mm-hmm. and come in the same sizes as tapestry needles. Tapestry needles have a blunt tip. And so just, you know, pick up some chenille or crewel needles and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I have them somewhere. I can't find them. Drives me nuts. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know people that do that. I just do pin stitches and don't worry about ending by weaving under. Because I usually am just doing pin stitches from the front.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I do that too. This was in Gann's thing. It's just tent stitches, which is the first layer of.
Oh, well, those are hard to weave through.
Right.
Absolutely. And, yeah. I could see the need for something like that.
So I was really frustrated. And when she gave that tip, it's like, yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And yeah, so now it's just, just poke it through. Who cares? Because it's going to get stitched over on another layer anyway. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. But in the pin stitch. Who was it? Somebody said to me the other day where they had heard through Fiber talk about pin stitches, and they were a veteran stitcher. I forget who it was. And it was like a revelation to them. So, yeah, check out pin stitches. They will save you so much hassle.
Oh, my gosh. I teach all of my classes how to use pin stitches and how to use them for the particular stitches that are within the piece that we're working on. And a lot of people are like, you know what? This is something that I will carry into every project I do from now on. This is the most valuable thing I've ever learned.
Yep. Yeah, there. It's a powerful weapon. It really is.
It is.
Yep. All right, one more here, because the list is long, and as you said, we wouldn't even get... Well, we've done better than I thought we'd do, so...
Yeah, we have. I'm really pleased.
We made a dent in this thing. All right, so when you're stitching, is it music, TV, audiobooks, podcasts, or silence?
TV.
TV. Okay. All right.
And usually a TV, a show that I don't have to pay attention to.
Yes.
Doesn't that sound weird?
No, no, not at all. See, there's very specific shows and movies that are good for stitching. And then there's a lot of them that are terrible. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, there's, yeah. Like for instance, I'll give you a specific example, a new show on Netflix, Tehran, is an excellent show, a spy type thing. Has nothing to do with America. It's happens in Tehran, and it has to do with Israeli operatives. Superb, really good, really enjoying it. It's on Apple TV, not Netflix, Apple TV. Only releasing one every Friday night. And I thought, oh, this will be excellent because most spy type things are excellent stitching. Because there's a lot of vocabulary, or if there's much dialogue, it's not hard to follow. And,
yes.
And when you start hearing things explode, then you just look up. So it's pretty straightforward. Right. This has a bunch of subtitles because they speak in native languages. It's like, you gotta be kidding me.
Oh, bad choice. Yeah.
So now I have to watch that without stitching.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, geez.
Yeah. See, for me on Friday night, my go-to is a Netflix show, The Great British Baking Show.
see?
And I can stitch some while I'm watching this, but most of the time I'm like, what are they doing? How are they doing that? Oh, I haven't seen that technique.
Yep. Yeah.
So I find myself not stitching so I can pay attention.
Uh-huh. Yeah, see, that's a bad one. But, they're good.
Yeah, that's not a good one.
No.
Now, any sports event, perfect.
Perfect. Because
anything exciting that happens, they replay 59 times
Yep.
and you can see it.
Yep. Football, yeah, and you can tell just by the noises when they're getting ready to do a play or the pitcher's about ready to throw the pitch.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
just look up.
Right. Yeah, that's ideal stuff. Drag racing. I love watching drag racing because a 3-hour drag race show really involves about 30 minutes of actual racing. And the
Yeah,
rest is,
so Formula One for us.
Oh, yeah, there's another one. Yeah. Those sports is good.
Yeah, sports are really good. And anything that you've seen several times.
Yep. All the Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible, Hunt for Red October. I got just about all of them memorized. Just put them on, just let them roll.
Yeah, for me, all the Harry Potter movies, all of the Alien movies, because that's my favorite
Oh, Debbie,
series.
no, I can't do those.
And Die Hard, all of those
Oh,
movies are pretty
yeah.
good. Die Hard's pretty good.
Yep.
And there's some others that musicals are really good too, especially the old Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals, because who hasn't seen them 87
Right,
times?
right.
And so you can sing along and you don't even have to look up, but it keeps you entertained.
Yep. I'll tell the story of the first Alien movie, Sigourney Weaver, the first one. So I don't even think Mark and I were married. If we were, it wasn't very long. I don't remember. Because that we were married in 78, so whatever, however that works out. Went to the theater, and I have no idea. Like, I do not pay people in theaters to scare me and give me nightmares, so I won't go to horror films or anything. Why I wanted to go see this Alien movie, I have no idea. And Marga has a way of watching movies and staying detached from them.
Yes.
She rarely gets absorbed, and I get sucked into every movie. Like, you can scare me, you can make me cry. I mean, I just get immersed in them. And that movie is simply filmed to scare you half to death.
Oh, yeah.
And oh man, Margo was convinced I was going to have a heart attack halfway through. Because I mean, I was just jumping, and I was like, I hate that movie. It just, I'll never forget sitting in the theater with her that night, and she's just sitting there just watching the movie like it's paint drying on a wall, and my heart is just pounding, and it's just no, it's right around the corner. No, don't go there. Jeez. Oh, no, I hate that movie. Hate that movie. No.
Yeah, no, see, it's my favorite. And the reason why I like it, just real briefly, is because the growth of the character of Sigourney Weaver. She starts off as timid and afraid and fearful, and by the end, she is kicking butt and taking names and handling business. And I just love that. And that's the way she is in all of them. And I love it.
I didn't get to appreciate that because I think by then I was in the fetal position, just hoping for the lights to come on. So, no, I'll pass.
Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit movies are also good ones for me.
Yes,
So
yeah. And those go on forever, so you
they
can.
go on forever. And Rod doesn't like them because they got 75 different species in there, and he can't keep track of who's an elf and who's a dwarf and who's a hobbit, an orc and who's a goblin.
Give him a chart. Draw it out. Give him a chart.
It's like, nope, he's done. He's not going there.
All right, so that okay, so it's TV for both of us then. Okay.
It's
That's
TV.
good. Yep. Yeah, I'm set up so that when I stitch at my stand, I just look up and there's the TV. Yeah. It's perfect.
Yep, same here.
Yep. All right. The rest of the list for the next time.
Okey-doke.
I think so. So tonight, Trish and Wynn with 17th Century Whitework Samplers. Do not miss that. Do not miss it. Sunday we do more meditative stitching, and then debbiesdesigns.com and Silver Shining Needle Society for some classes. Sign up now. Which ones? Angles and mostly Amadeus we can sign up for right now, right?
Yes, through October the 31st, and then we cut off registration because it's taking a long time to get supplies in. The class will actually begin in January.
Okay, so sign up quickly. And then get on Debbie's mailing list so you can get the mystery stitch and the ornament. And then there's another little chart that comes with it if you sign up that's on her homepage, which I'm a big fan of. So there you go. Two free ones and notification. Well, three free ones because the Stitch Along, Mystery Stitch, that's free, right?
That's free. Yeah, all you have to do is just go on Mondays and get the next part of it.
Yep. So give your email address, get three free Debbie designs. How's that? Holy smokes.
And there's three additional free charts that were Stitch Alongs that are also on my website.
Six. We're up to six for just your email address that she won't sell or use because she doesn't have time to do it anyway.
So. No, I don't.
So there we have that. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Debbie.
Enjoyed it as always.